Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Room 42. I'm Liz Fraley from Single Sourcing Solutions. I'm your moderator. Our interviewer is Janice Summers from TC Camp, and welcome to Dr. Brett Oppegard, who today's guest in Room 42. Brett teaches digital media and intersections of technical communication, disability studies, mobile technologies, digital inequality, and journalism at the University of Hawaii, Manoa. He teaches about news literacy, multimedia production, media accessibility, and media entrepreneurship, including within his two primary areas of scholarly expertise, locative media or place-connected media, and audio description, which is the remediation of visual media into audio audible media for people who are blind or have low vision. He worked for more than a decade as a staff newspaper writer, including as an arts critic in the Portland, Oregon area. And he's also worked with a variety of publications since then, primarily as a freelance writer. He's been the undergraduate chair of UH's journalism program since the fall of 2019. And his research has been supported by the National Park Service, the National Endowment for the Humanities, and the National Endowment for the Arts and Google and others. Today, Brett's here to help us start answering the question, how does audio description improve accessibility? Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
We are thrilled to have you here. And there is so much to unpack in your topic. It's very interesting and fascinating. And there's a lot of things that you bring out in some of your articles. But perhaps, like, I always like to kind of start with an origin story. How did you get involved with this project?
Yeah, well, as Liz said, I studied locative media, and I was doing a bunch of research projects with the National Park Service on locative media. And one day they called me up and said, we have this problem with accessibility. We'd like you to take a look at it. And they shipped me a box of brochures, about 400 brochures that were all pieces of paper folded up with pictures and text and maps on it.
Right.
And they said, how do we make those accessible for people who are blind or visually impaired? What can we do about that? And so that really started.
What was the thought that went through your mind when you said, because that is an awesome, like, what was your thought when you were posed with that problem? Because that is a pretty big problem.
Yeah, my first thought was, you know, how am I going to do this? Because I made the assumption that there were a lot of support systems in place already for it. You know, I assumed that there was a lot of empirical research on this. I assumed there were a lot of online support systems, third-party software. I assumed all that existed.
You would think, right?
Yeah, because I would think so. I mean,
there's nothing new, right? You would think that there'd be some research already done.
And what I found was, pretty much the opposite. There was most of the work's done by practitioners who use audio recording performance as a way to audio describe. And that's just not affordable or practical for most situations. And that led us to undertake what was the first major obstacle, is like, how do we make audio descriptions? So we built open source, open access web tools for that. And then another part of it, like, once now we can make it, how are we going to make it well? And we started to investigate the various best practices around the world and found that a lot of times they were really thin or abstract or generalized. Mm. And so we started to say, okay, so where can we begin to do some research on this and really dig into it? And, it's taken quite a while to get the open source, open access tools developed. Those are in great state now on the website, which I'm sure shared here. And we also use that website as a place for these resources to exist. So people don't have to go through that, you know, hundreds and hundreds of hours of research I did just to find, like, where are the best practices and what's been written about this before. And it just, all that stuff, it just took me and my research assistants an incredible amount of time to do. So basically, when we find something interesting that we think's going to be valuable for lots of people, we'll put it on the website, a link to it or a citation or
mm-hmm.
or something like that. And then we also put our research on there when we publish it. So as we develop new pieces, we put those on there so people can find them and read them without having access issues through the various services.
Yeah, which is quite handy, you know, to be able to get to the articles without having to get through some, because some a lot of the places you have to be subscribers to get to. So now, so you're faced with the challenge of creating an audio map. Where do you begin? Like, because there's so much that goes into a map.
You want to start with the hardest one? Could you say something easy first? Start with like, you have a ball on the table or something. Okay, a map. How do we? Okay, so map. Let's start with maps. I'm just kidding. So every park site has a brochure, just about, and then every brochure has a big map, usually, because national parks are sometimes as large as states. Like if you think of Yellowstone,
even county parks have the same thing. They all have a map. I just visited a county park last week. They give you a map. They want you to be oriented and where things are. Yeah.
And so the map has a variety of functions. And one thing we did initially in our research was determine what's the purpose of a map in this context. Like when somebody gets a brochure and they look at the map, how are they going to use it? And we found that there's, of course, the navigation part, which you mentioned, like how to get around, but there's also cognitive mapping, like understanding the place and its boundaries and what's in it and that sort of thing. And then there's cultural, historical understanding that comes from a map. Like oftentimes maps show places that don't exist anymore. So you can overlay that on the present day, and then there's also natural understanding where you might understand the terrain, like here's a mountain here, here's a river there. So there's different purposes for a map,
right?
And
points
of interest. Yeah, absolutely.
There's a particular redwood that means something. It has a name, right?
Yep, all the highlights of an area. But there's also a whole bunch of other stuff on the maps, like where are the bathrooms at? You know, what are the trails? What are these little side roads that you can go on to get here and there? There's the maps usually, I mean, there, number one, there are a lot of different types of maps. There are maps that are illustrations. There are maps that are like the flat cartographer maps that you're probably thinking of right now. And then there are a whole bunch of in-betweens, like part illustration, part cartography. And these maps in their variety often are designed because people have certain purposes that they want to use them for.
Mm-hmm.
So our first step in the research was to figure out, okay, how do people use maps in national parks? And then we categorize those, and then we decided, okay, so when people audio describe the maps, then they should convey that purpose to the listener. And so, for example, if this is mainly a cognitive mapping, you're not going to necessarily like get in your car and drive around, a city that used to have a historical, town underneath it or something. There's no way to really drive around it, but you're just like imagining what it used to be like. The audio description should reflect that. It shouldn't have some sort of flat template that every map goes through. So there's some interpretation that takes place, and then the goal is to communicate that purpose to the listener.
Mm-hmm.
And the other part of the other sort of goal that we set out at when we were creating maps is if the person making the map thought it was important to be on the map, then the person listening to the map should get a chance to listen to it. So that means that every part of the map needs to be described. You can't just say, here's a map of Yellowstone Park. It's about the size of the state of Delaware. It has lots of roads and mountains and things on it. You know, that doesn't really help a person like the way a person seeing the map would use it.
Right.
So yeah. In the case of a large map, we have a variety of techniques for it, but primarily we recommend an overview. Like if you glanced at a map, what would you take from it? And that is usually about a paragraph long. And then to break that map into uses, like if you're going to Old Faithful and Yellowstone, what's the map in that area going to tell you, and then describe that part. So, and then if you're going to Yellowstone Falls, you know, there's another section with all that part of the map. And so there's a holistic part at the beginning that sort of lets the listener know, this is what this map's all about. This is the purpose it serves. And then we try to break it down into usable sections. And those can overlap. They're not like hard boundaries. They can, sometimes you can describe certain parts in multiple sections. You can move things around on our tool, duplicate items, whatever you need to do. But the main point of it is you want to give a person who's blind or has low vision the same agency to explore the park that a person who can see the map does. Right. And what I've learned from people using our described maps is that they get to be involved in deciding how the trip's going to play out. So it's not just, hey, we're going to take you to the park and you're going to sit in the back of the car and drive around and not really, you know, you're going to go wherever we want to go and you're not going to have any idea where we're going. It's more along the lines of person who's blind or low vision says, oh, I listened to the map. I'd really like to go to Yellowstone Falls and hear that big waterfall, you know, and then so they can be a part of that planning discussion, and then that gives people more agency to participate in the park in new ways. And that's probably some of the most exciting feedback I've received about it, is just those discussions that get struck from the descriptions.
Because when you describe things, to what depth and level, I mean, do you describe road conditions? This is a horse trail. This is a person only trail, narrow and rugged. I mean, to what depths do you go into describing? Because maps have, you know, thickness of line, they have elevation markers. Do you go into that level when you're
describing? Yeah, the audio description philosophy is basically make an equivalent experience. So for the thickness of line, you can describe that. What we recommend, for example, is describing the map key. Uh-huh. And then, like say, for example, there's horse trails on the map key, then you can make a section in the description about where are all the horse trails. So if you want to go on a horse ride, you can do that. And we just try to make the equivalent experience. We don't try to do more. We just try to make it equivalent, and that's enough. And that's really what audio description is designed to do. It's like captioning for people who are deaf or hard of hearing is intended to give the equivalent experience of hearing the television program or whatever.
Right.
And audio description is designed to give the equivalent experience of seeing the visual media. So whatever information is in the visual media, that's what we try to describe.
Right.
And with maps, it can get quite complicated, but there's also a big payoff for that. And I think they also make the maps more usable for everybody to have such description, because audio description, just like captioning, is valuable in lots of contexts for people, even people who are not deaf or hard of hearing. Audio description is also valuable for people who are print dyslexic or like to listen to things or need their hands right, free right. When working on something. There's just a whole bunch of contexts where description can be really helpful. And so part of this is also about just making better media in general. If you make your media and it's accessible, it's also better media for everyone. And so that's also in the mix there.
That's very true. And when you think about it in technical and professional communications, I don't know everybody, but I don't know of anyone who's talked about audio. except until you, right? You're the first person I'm talking to that talks about audio as part of the technical and professional communication.
There are scholars out there studying this. There are a lot of great folks. But in this field of technical communication, there are very few. Primarily, the cluster of scholars is in the translation studies field, and they're in Europe. Mm. In Western Europe, there's a big cluster of them working on this, but they're working at it from a translation angle, like how you translate language or translate media. So there are some people in that, but definitely room for more people. So if this is something that interests you as a scholar, interest anybody that hears this program, then just send me an email or whatever. I get you connected to the community, and we'd welcome many more people working on this.
Yeah, because I mean,
but fine.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, yeah. So I'm still sort of back on the equivalent experience in the map, and it was really the horse trails that did it for me. In a lot of ways, that seems like you're doing better overall design and architecture of whatever it is that you're delivering, right? We're putting in horse trails. So let's have a section about horse trails. And so that if people are interested in that, they can go and look and see more about them or whatever. It gives access to that part of the map. And it seems like that the lessons you're learning overall have implications for organization and architecture and depth.
Yeah, I think it's all part of the technical communication puzzle, and like, how do you say it and what do you say? So part of it's the medium too, where we, when we went back to the earlier question about when we started, there was also no way to deliver this audio description to people easily. And so we created free mobile apps to do that on Android and iOS smartphones. And what we found, to begin with, actually, we studied how do people listen to audio description. And when we started this project in 2014, there was still a little bit of a mixture of technologies being used. Some people were using like Daisy readers and things like that. Mm-hmm. And as we worked on the project, there was this, as with society in general, a mass migration to smartphones, and everybody in the community of people who are blind or low vision has a smartphone now. So we determined that was the best way to get audio description to people. So basically, when people make audio description on our system, they can quickly export that as HTML and put it on their website. They can our system will create an instant link they can send to people. You can put it onto our mobile app. So there's just lots of ways to get it to people in place when they need it, as opposed to even if you think about a brochure as an artifact of communication, you have to go to the visitor center, you have to find the rack, you have to get the brochure, you have to carry it around, you may, drop it somewhere and then you find out I need it later. But with a smartphone, you're not going to have any of those problems. You're going to always have that in your pocket and you're going to be pretty certain not to lose it.
Because nobody's going to drop their smartphone.
Yeah, they're not going to drop it. And our system, another thing we learned early on in the research was that in some parts of the parks, there was not good cell service. Mm-hmm. So what we do with our system is as soon as somebody opens a file, like the Yosemite file or whatever, it'll download the content to their phone, so they don't need the connection after that. So as soon as if they go to the visitor center and there's a hotspot, they can download the information and then they can go all around the park and have that on their phone. And so there's that. So this has a lot of angles, I guess, that require innovation and adaptation. And that was, dissemination was part of it.
Interesting. So now, how would this apply to like not the parks and recreation centers? How would you take this into like a commercial entity?
Well, any kind of visual media that you want to describe, you can do it on our system, and lots of people have used it for different things. But basically, if you imagine what are the building blocks of description, you're usually describing people in some kind of activity is usually what's shown, or an object, a cultural artifact of some type, a map, a collage. You know, they're kind of the same thing, no matter what context it's in. Like describing myself right now, I would describe my background. And for the people out there listening that are blind or low vision, I'm in a rectangular Zoom box with a Hawaii scene behind me, a palm tree and a beach and some crashing waves. I'm shown from the shoulders up, basically. I have a dark blue colored shirt on. I'm a middle-aged white male with brown hair, pinkish tan skin, it appears in this video, and clear glasses, clear frame glasses and headphones. So you get a sort of sense of like even that in 30 seconds, I just made that part of this more accessible to somebody who was listening.
Right. So when you're doing infographics, you could do that.
Any visual media. Doesn't any matter if it's moving or static.
Charts and anything that has like conclusions or pieces on that you want to. What are the best practices you have for creating the writing of the audio description so that you provide a better experience? Do you find anything in particular that good tips?
Well, I've been starting to expand the sort of audio description world into kind of, you know, cognitive science and cognitive processing and memory and things like that. So what we found in audio description, because if you imagine you're reading a text and you can see it, you can pause whenever you want and you can go back, and it's pretty easy to kind of retrace your steps if you get lost. But when audio is playing, it just is, it's linear and it just keeps going like a train. And so one of the things we found in audio description is to provide a lot of navigation elements to it. For example, the first thing I always describe when I'm describing something is what is it that I'm describing? For example, like a horizontal photograph, color photograph or something like that. So you start right there, and then somebody can visualize, okay, the next piece of information I'm going to get, it fits within that frame of what a photograph is. And then my recommendation is to work or imagine you're working in what's called, quote unquote, working memory, which is different than sensory memory or long-term memory. And in working memory, people can roughly remember 4 to 8 chunks of information at a time before it starts filtering out the back end. And so as you're giving people information, think, you know, like a paragraph or so, and then pause and see where the person's at, you know? So in our system, we create what we call components. And in those components, you have the description of the artifact and then what we're calling the synopsis. And synopsis in Greek means seeing together. So we like the idea that you're seeing something together, and this is the big overview. And it's about 4 to 8 chunks of information. And then the next section of the description we call in-depth description. And that's where we take the synopsis and we roll it out into all its details. So if you're imagining a map or something, you might start saying, you know, here are the 10 highlighted areas we're going to describe in more depth in this map. First one is Old Faithful, and then that section will be described. And with our tools, it allows people with screen readers to jump around, so they're not stuck in any place. That's also an innovation I think we've made that's been really well received. Typically, audio description was delivered in ways that there were very few breaks in it. One of the first pieces.
Forest trajectory, like you had to go.
Yeah, forest trajectory. I mean, one of the first pieces I listened to when I was learning about this field. It was an audio recording that the narrator got on and said, this audio description is going to be an hour and 45 minutes. I'd like you to find a nice, comfortable seat and sit down and let's get started. And so it was like an hour, one audio file. And so, you know, like, and you're thinking like, I just want to know where the bathroom is. It's like right? First hour or second hour. So that's, so what we try to do is break it into these really small navigable chunks. And then in our system, the screen reader creates a table of contents and the user of it can go up or down the table of contents and find what they want and select it. And then it jumps to the description and they can jump back to the table of contents.
And it makes it easier for them to repeat another area that they want to repeat, easier to find, navigate back to that and repeat it.
Right. Right. So I would say, you know, the key tip I would have for people is to break things down into the like modular atomized chunks of information and then try to make those maybe clustered together in similar descriptions about the place.
In writing and in technical professional communication, we talk in terms of architecture and we talk about logical chunks, right? In a particular type of architecture where you describe one thing and you describe it really well. Then you go on to the next thing and describe it really well. These can be put together. They're isolated, but they come together and they stand on their own. So you're describing that same modularity in audio, which is interesting. I just wanted people to pick up on that. So keep going.
Well, yeah, and I'm seeing graph theory. That's my visual of this. Mm-hmm. Like the picture I have in my head anyway. We're talking audio and I have a picture in my head.
Good. And I'm seeing written architecture structure. So
yeah, there are really a lot of ways to come into audio description. There's production research that needs to be done. There's reception research that needs to be done. There's organization. There's best practices. There's performative, you know, how's the voice sound? There's just a whole bunch. Like I said, it's a field that's really wide open for lots of folks to come in and make a mark. So when I look out at it, it's just sort of overwhelming the amount of research that needs to be done. I certainly can't do it all or even, you know, a large fraction of it. I would love to have more people working on this, especially in technical communication, because I think it's perfect for technical communication. Yet very few TC people have picked up on it.
Right. That's true. Very few of them talk about the audio aspects, but it's very important, especially, I mean, if you're trying to inform and instruct someone, this is technical and professional communicators need to, you want to be inclusive. You need to pay attention to those who are visually impaired, blind or visually impaired, or, you know, like me, it's easier for me to listen, right? Than it is for me to read sometimes. So how do you address that and how do you meet those needs? Even in technical and professional communications, if you're trying to inform and educate people, you need to have an audio component, right?
Well, and people are rushing toward making video.
Yeah.
And they're missing that component.
Right.
Yeah, videos can be audio described. There are, if you think of audience, there are roughly 20 million people in the United States alone that are blind or low vision. Worldwide, the number I don't have on top of my head, but I think it's around 300 million or something, about the size of the United States.
Right.
So there are enormous number of people. This typically is a situation where folks, when they get older, they start to lose their vision. And so we have a lot of people who are senior citizens who become very isolated if you don't have accessible content and they feel like they can't participate in public places or public forums or anything if they're not accessible to them through audio description. So
right.
I think it's really like a lost part of our society here, in the sense that they're visual media is definitely privileged, and the visual sense is privileged in our society quite dramatically. And so then when you have that kind of privilege, you have to ask who's getting left out because of that privilege. And it's people who can't see or see well. And then they're on the sidelines when they could definitely contribute. They could definitely be a part of whatever social activity there is, and they want to be. And so they're being isolated and disenfranchised. And it's sad. It's causing a lot of health problems for people. It's causing a lot of mental health issues. So I think this is a very easy way to, not easy in the sense of there's a lot to do, but it's a simple way to just like tilt our perspective a little bit. Like, let's bring in the 10% of people who can't see well here, and let's bring them into the club too.
Right. And while Liz brings up a good point, a lot of people are rushing to videos and producing like, you know, instructional videos that still doesn't, it's still not to the depths of what you're talking about, like describing things, because even if you're doing a short video, you're assuming that they can see it. What if they're just listening to it? You're still not describing the background. You're not describing how to put the, blood pressure cuff on, right? You're not describing it in a way that somebody who is visually impaired could understand it better in a richer format, right?
Yeah, for videos, we recommend that the first thing is to write the script with a blind person in mind. Mm-hmm. And that usually makes a better script because the narrator is describing what's being shown in a kind of a natural way, like everybody else is seeing it. And then on top of that, audio description, there's two types of audio description for videos. There's the stuff it in type, like you stuff the audio description in between pauses in the dialogue. That's what most audio descriptions is. I typically use a different approach, is where I take the soundtrack to the video and then I take an audio editor and I insert as much audio description as I feel is necessary for the video. And that includes each scene change I'll describe, or if there's like a repetitive, like say there's an A-roll scene, like me in this beach scene here, and it comes back to me five times in the video. I won't describe that every time, but I'll just say that I'm shown multiple times and the background's the same. And so that way people, when they're listening, they can hear about each scene and what it looks like, and then they can hear the scene play out, and then they also get a sense of the holistic context of like, what is this visual media trying to say that's unspoken,
right?
So that's what I recommend on the videos, is to audio, just number one, make it in the script. That's so much easier than trying to cram it in. And then number two, when you do the audio description, I certainly recommend you know creating a track for people who are blind or low vision, and then that way they can hear the whole description. Because it's not really fair. Like typically what happens, there's like one or two, number one, the scenes change about every 3 to 5 seconds in most videos, sometimes even more frequently, sometimes one every second. And then number two, the dialogue is usually so tightly edited in there that you maybe have 1 or 2 seconds of instrumental music or something somewhere where you can put in a little bit of description, but it's not, it doesn't really do the job. So in videos, I recommend the new background track. And it's, you also set it up in a way that everybody can listen to the same track. The one mistake that people make when they do audio description is they create a piece of audio description that only people who are blind or low vision can listen to, and then a whole separate piece of media for people who are not blind or low vision. And then all that does in a practical sense is when, say, you go to a museum and you're at a gallery and the person wants to participate with their family or friends. They have to go in a different place and be isolated and separated. And it's just a bad practical experience for the people, or the pragmatics are wrong.
Right.
So really what we're trying to get at is integrating this into everyday media, and social inclusion, I think, is an underlying goal of what our whole project is about, bringing people together and having them participate in public together.
It's interesting that you talk about a piece of art or a sculpture and doing the audio description of that, and having one single source where, you know, those who are visually impaired and those who aren't listen to the same audio description. Because I think that there's a richness when you have to audio describe a piece of art that may be overlooked by even those that are not visually impaired. There's some subtleties that, because you go in and you describe everything in the art. I think there's some examples on your website that I highly recommend people go and look at and listen to, right? Because there's a richness in that description that others would overlook. So by including and what was the phrase that you just said? Social inclusion?
Yeah, social inclusion. Yeah. Because everybody, people who are blind are excluded. They're socially excluded. So we want to turn that around.
But it's like we all benefit from it. It's not just, right? So it's not excluding them and saying, oh, you have to go listen to this. It's like, no, let's all listen to this. And we all.
Yeah, it's so not excluding sighted people either. That's the other part of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not excluding anybody. It's just bringing everybody together.
Yeah.
And that's just a different mindset. I had one research assistant of mine who's blind told me about going to a museum, and she was with her family, and she asked if they had any audio description of the exhibit. And I said, oh yeah, we do. We have this computer monitor over in the corner here in the back of the gallery, and you can go sit there and listen to that while your family walks around and has fun, you know? And so that's what she had to do.
Wow.
And so that's the kind of exclusion that happens every day for people who are blind or low vision.
Yeah.
And we don't necessarily think about it if we don't have a friend or family member who is in that situation. But when we talk about the, you know, 10 to 20 million people who are blind or low vision in the United States, they have family members, friends, and all that group is affected by this as well. So it's a significant usability problem. It's a significant social justice problem. There's just a lot kind of in there for people to think about.
Yeah,
absolutely. Now you have a fun little event that happened. Now I don't know, how does this happen every year? I know it's coming up, so I want to talk about
it. We do. Okay.
Does it happen once or twice a year?
Well, we haven't got on a real regular schedule. It's either been once or twice a year. It's happened every year since 2017. So this will be our second one of 2021. It's called a Descriptathon, and it's based on a hackathon model. So if you know what a hackathon is, you can kind of guess what a Descriptathon is. We bring together.
Well, let's assume you don't know what a hackathon is.
Okay. Hackathon
tell us about what a Descriptathon is. It's fun, but go ahead.
Tell us what it is. Okay. A Descriptathon, we bring together people from different communities, different stakeholders. And in this case, we primarily are working with national parks. I'll just use the National Park as an example, although this Descriptathon, we're also working with the Kennedy Center and some other places that are not necessarily national parks. But anyway, let's say it's a national park, and the national park would like to have their media be more accessible. So they join one of our Descriptathons, and we create a team around that site. So let's say the Lincoln Memorial or something like that. And a couple people from that site participate, a couple staff members. And then we also bring into the team a volunteer who is not paid by the site. And we have that person come in because we want to sort of break down organizational jargon and organizational culture, kind of transcend that. And then also on the team, we bring in a couple of people who are blind or low vision, typically from the American Council of the Blind, but depending on who we're working with, we try to find associations in that natural or national context. Like in this October, we're working with National Parks UK. So we're also working with the Royal National Institute for Blind People. And so basically this team is five people at its smallest. Some of the teams get up to 10 or 12 people. And it includes at least two people who are blind or low vision. And they basically, in this descriptathon, we have a lot of game-like exercises that teach people how to do it. And then simultaneously, they're working on their own public product, like their own visitor center brochure. Mm-hmm. And co-creating that with people directly who are blind or low vision. And at the end, they release that to the public. So at the end, they'll have a more accessible place. And they're also have planted the seeds of accessibility in their organization where people know how to do it. They have the tools to do it. And they can start creating more description about their exhibits or their trails or whatever it is they want to describe. Mm-hmm. And so it's a lot of fun. We have prizes and contests and things, and we try to make it, not like a boring training. We try to make it a fun, exciting training. And so as a part of the Descriptathon, there's competitions where in this one coming up, we'll have 16 teams, and all 16 teams will describe the same object. Pardon me?
Oh.
16 teams? Yeah.
16 teams.
16 teams.
16.
Wow.
And they're all doing the same one.
They'll all do the same. For the exercise, they'll all do this. And this is part of the contest. So I'll do the same description. For example, in this one, we have Santa Monica Mountains National Recreation Area, I think it's called. And they have a big collage on their brochure, and that's one of them that all of them will try to describe. So even if they're not in Santa Monica, they'll try. So the National Parks UK, the Parks Canada, this whoever's Kennedy Center, all those people will take a shot at it. And then when their description is complete, we pair them up in a bracket, like a tournament bracket, like a NCAA basketball tournament. We have, say, Brown versus Board of Education versus Cave and Basin in Parks Canada, and they take those two descriptions and we give them to a group of judges who are blind or low vision. We basically do an A-B test and say, which do you like better and why? And then that's the one, and then there's say five judges, and the one with the most votes wins, and they move on in the tournament and get different prizes.
That sounds great.
Yeah,
well, because you'd learn a lot. That seems like a great way to figure
it
out.
Yeah, it is. Because even though it's not like, Parks and Recreation in Canada, it's not their park, but they're learning how to do their park better, right?
From
participating. Yeah, they're practicing how to do a collage. Mm-hmm. Or they're practicing, we have contests on portraits, objects, maps, and collages. So they're practicing, like, how do I describe people, even though it's not their people? And then when they do their own brochure at the same time, then they have that skill that, I've done this in the contest. In the contest, even though it's a friendly competition, a lot of people take it, I don't know, seriously isn't the right word, but they take, they want to do a good job.
And they want to win.
And they want to, have a description that stacks up well against a competing team. So it creates this sort of energy that's hard to replicate in other ways besides using gamification techniques. So that's why we like the gamification part of it, and in the way it motivates people and energizes people.
So do you have spectators at these?
we have spectators. I mean, anybody who wants to join can watch, so that's a good idea. Well,
the next one is October
26th through 28th, We're like I said, making a sort of a, we started out just in the United States, and now we've included Parks Canada for the last three Descriptathons and National Parks UK in this next Descriptathon. And then we're expanding into Africa in the next one with National Parks Nigeria, and then a whole bunch of other folks.
I honestly think that everyone who's listening to it, if they're listening to it before October 26th, they need to put this on their calendar and they need to bookmark if they're interested in being better communicators, because this is also a great way for people who are curious about the audio description, like in how they may apply it in their technical and professional communication in their commercial company. This is a great way for them to listen in and observe.
Well, they can, they can participate too.
They can participate as a spectator, and they can, you know, lay odds in Vegas at the game, you know, who's going to win.
Right.
But I think it's a good way too for people to approach this and just kind of get a glimpse, because everybody who's in technical and professional communications, they're all competitive in the way that they all want to be better communicators, because that's what it's about. Right. So,
right.
I'll tune in. I'm
going to
bookmark it on my calendar.
Oh, good. Well, great. We're always looking for volunteers to join teams so you can participate. We have semi-regularly, we have professional audio describers who just join the teams and volunteer their times just to practice. We have scholars, we have students, we have all sorts of people just who like to do it. So if you're interested, just send me an email. I'm sure that'll be linked on this broadcast somehow, and I'll be happy to include you in the next Descriptathon.
We will be, and I want to make sure that we also, you know, we'll help promote that for you too through the TC camp.
You bet.
So, yeah, you know, however we can help you to promote that, because I think it's fantastic.
Oh, that'd be wonderful.
Very timely and very important, because we're all talking about the importance of inclusion. Yeah. So. This is a key aspect. It's hard to believe, but our time is up.
It is.
It's been such a delight talking with you. And please, everybody go look at the website, which the link is also included. There's so much information out there for everyone to tap into, and some really interesting mind benders, right? To help you think of things in a different perspective. So, and hopefully everyone will be inspired by it. I know I am.
Absolutely. So,
yeah, awesome.
Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. Yeah, it was a lot of fun talking, and I appreciate your questions. Every time I have a conversation about audioscription, it always kind of heightens and sharpens my ideas about it. So I appreciate your thoughtful questions.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you for being here.
Sure.
All right. Bye, everybody.
All right. Okay. Bye, everyone.
Bye.